the OTB Podcast Network.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
Well, another Champions League evening in store. Dortmund, Man City is still very much alive. Liverpool hoping for another Anfield upset against Madrid. We have Sam Lee from The Athletic and Dan McDonald then on the football show after nine. Wednesday night rugby with lots going on. Ireland against France at the weekend. We have Mr. Zeebo returning. Andy Dunn and Keith Wood on the way after 8 o'clock. 53106, the text number. Tweet us, at Off the Ball. Nathan Murphy, hello to you.
Hey, Joe.
Oof, you're loud there, a bit distorted, but we'll get through it. Give us a hey, Joe, again.
Hey, Joe. Will I turn myself down bit by bit, bit
oh,
by bit?
That's okay.
How's that? Is that
yeah,
okay?
Much better, much
I apologize
better.
Apologize to the listeners yet again.
Well, indeed. For what? I mean, there are so many things to apologize for. Anne-Marie Donlan, hello.
Yeah.
You missed it yesterday, Anne-Marie. It was all kicking off.
I know.
Whew. Agenda setter Nathan Murphy.
Mm.
Got all the calls today.
Again.
Did you get calls today?
All the big shows.
Go on.
PK, Lunchtime Live, Hard Shoulder, Bidding War for a bit of Murphy action.
Mm-hmm. And who won the bidding war?
Went with Lunchtime Live.
Interesting. You know? Interesting.
Well, it was the only one I could fit into my hectic schedule.
Well, indeed.
Joe.
Indeed.
As you know. I was... quite taken aback by the reaction. I was just throwing it out there. I thought maybe, you know, some people might have an opinion on it. I wasn't quite expecting that everyone would be up in arms at the thought of a child wearing a jersey of an English footballer. Yet here we are.
If you're just tuning in and missed the show yesterday, Nathan Murphy casually just yesterday mentioned, bit of a dilemma. My son loves England, loves their players.
Whoa, back up. He doesn't love England.
Adores England, sorry.
He is a Ireland supporter. If Ireland were there this year, he would be wearing his Ireland jersey. He may wear it some days over the summer anyways. Mm-hmm. But he likes the Premier League. He likes the English players. And he thinks England are going to win the Euros. So he wants an England jersey with Harry Kane on the back.
Mm. And you threw this out there and said...
No, he's not doing a two-minute silence for Prince Philip's funeral. Let's not get carried away here.
Well, and you said, well, I'm, you know, I kind of... I see you're just a child and, you know, you explained the 800 years thing to him and he digested that and accepted it and was willing to move beyond, extend the hand across the Irish Sea. And you thought, well, is there any harm? Is there any harm? And I think you were leaning towards, you know, he's a child, there's no big issue here. And the texture spoke, I would say 99% against.
Have many people contacted you directly, Nathan?
No, the only contacts I got, I got the usual Twitter pylon with people misquoting me that I, by the end of it, I hated the English, even though as a Premier League commentator, I earn my living out of the English game. Why do I hate the English?
Mm-hmm.
Which was just not true. I did get a lot of DMs with cheap websites to buy fake jerseys on, which was quite helpful. So thanks for that.
Kevin Kilbane spoke. Everybody had their say. And then Lunchtime Live. So Nathan went on and explained his dilemma. And then the legend that is Henry McKean. Spoke to the people of Ireland, the streets of Dublin. What would they say of Nathan Murphy's dilemma? So let's bring you some of what the people had to say about Nathan's dilemma now.
You're a football supporter. You support Aston Villa.
Yeah.
They're still in the Premier League?
Of course they are. You nipple. They're going to be top 10 this season.
Would you buy your son or daughter an England jersey?
I have no sons and daughters, but my nephews, both of whose father is English. I would definitely buy them in jersey, yeah.
No, it's not silly at all, because my son supports English football teams. He's 10. Yeah, I think he actually probably has an English jersey.
If your son or daughter wanted to wear the jersey, that would be no problem with me. It's like if they wanted to wear Man United versus Liverpool versus Chelsea,
and
it's all a choice.
You wouldn't see it as unpatriotic?
Absolutely not, no. I think patriotism comes from an awful lot of different things rather than a piece of cloth that you wear. So no, absolutely not. It wouldn't be a problem whatsoever.
Yes, of course I would. I'd have no problem with that at all. It would be their option. It wouldn't be mine.
Yeah, I would let my child wear an England jersey because I don't think it defines who you are.
Okay, what do you wear?
I wouldn't be happy about it, but that's his choice.
There we are, Nathan. Once again, the people on the street showing far more sense and decorum than the people on Twitter.
Well, I was more reassured having listened to that once you put a microphone in front of somebody's face and they have to actually answer the question instead of anonymously just trolling you on Twitter, that maybe there's a bit more balance. Did I hear correctly what that first man said when Henry asked, are Aston Villa in the Premier League? And he said, of course you are. Of course they are. You nipple.
Yeah, I think it's the first time Henry has been called a nipple.
Is that an old Dublin phrase that I've never heard before?
I don't know.
Is this an insult in certain parts of Dublin?
I think it is. I didn't think it was a compliment. Yeah. What are the characteristics of a nipple that he was getting at?
Jesus.
Stupidity? I don't know. Either way, Henry McKean and nipple.
You're going down a hole here. You don't want to go.
Yeah. 5-3-106 as the next half hour is of content. Yeah, there we go. So Henry McKean took the streets, and that was unanimous. That was unanimous. He couldn't find anyone really to say, oh, this is a disgrace and how dare he. And there we are, Nathan. Problem solved.
His mother has intervened and had a look at the England jersey, which is obviously plain white, and said, sure, it'll be wrecked the first time you go out playing in it.
Away jersey. Get him that nice red that they won the World Cup in 66.
Nice. It is a lovely jersey. Okay. All right, yeah.
There you go. So there, look, it's settled. We're done. The people have come to your rescue. We should start the news round on Off the Ball and News Talk with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette made of what matters. Anne-Marie, we are starting with Champions League this evening.
Yeah, Liverpool manager Jurgen Klopp says they can't take comebacks, Joe, for granted just because the club has a rich history of them. His side obviously go into the second leg of their Champions League quarter-final tonight with a lot to do. They're 3-1 down on aggregate to Real Madrid. Kick-off in an empty Anfield is at 8 o'clock and Klopp says that they have to keep a clean sheet tonight.
You don't get a comeback because you did have a comeback in the past. You only have a chance if you play really good football in the present, and that's what we have to do. The best situation would be if you don't bring yourself in a situation that you need a comeback, and we will see. And we should not concede. And if we then can create more than we had at Madrid, and that should be possible, because we didn't have a lot. We will see what we get in the end. But it's not. I actually really mean we cannot just take comebacks for granted. Especially not without a crowd in the stadiums. And we have to create our own atmosphere again for this game.
Especially given the fact they've only won 2 of their last 13 against Spanish clubs. And they most certainly went out last year to Atletico and they were a better team last year. Plus, we've all probably, Nathan, underestimated Real Madrid a touch. I know they're past their best and a lot of their players are past their best. At the same time, they are unbeaten in 13 matches in all competitions. They have 6 wins in a row. They beat Barcelona at the weekend. And if Liverpool play a high line and give Toni Kroos that 15-metre radius to do what he wants, frankly, and even point to Vinicius, you know, and practically send him text messages about what he wants him to do, then they'll be in big trouble again. Look, 2-0 feels possible, but I mean, really, it's hard not to see Madrid score once and then Liverpool end not scoring 4.
I think it does feel possible because you look at that Liverpool team and from the midfield up, the only player that's really missing is Jordan Henderson. So they've Fabinho, Wijnaldum, Salah, Firmino, Mane. From the team of recent seasons that have done so well in Europe and in the Premier League, I still think it's a surprising selection that there's no Thiago or Jota in there. Unquestionably, Liverpool can win this at 2-0. And if there was a crowd there, you would almost expect them to go and win this 2-0 on one of those old cliche of famous Anfield nights. But it's unbelievable how their form has collapsed at home. Like 68 games unbeaten at Anfield in the Premier League. 3.5 years, going on 4 years unbeaten in the Premier League. And until that game against Villa, they couldn't buy a victory at home.
That was their first home win this year.
Exactly. Yeah. So you couldn't really say with any confidence at all that they can go and win. And Real Madrid are probably, unfortunately for them, this group being compared with the great Real Madrid team that were winning 3 out of 4 Champions Leagues. There's no Ronaldo. There's no Bale at his peak. There's not too many superstars in that side right now. And there's never any credit given to their manager in any way. It's remarkable considering how much love there is for Zidane as a footballer and for certainly my generation being the best footballer of that period, that there's a sort of looking at them at the sideline of, oh, this guy's just sort of bluffing, he's getting away with it, that somehow he keeps these players manage to drag him through again and again. But there's enough quality likewise in that Real Madrid team and enough insight into how to win from Kroos, from Casemiro, from Modric, who still, every time you watch him, has moments of just unbelievable bravery on the ball. What he will do to help out his defenders, the positions on the pitch he will pick the ball up. Even if Liverpool go with that high press and get it right, he will still pick it up, facing his own goal, 10 yards outside the D, and pull out the right pass every single time. So that midfield, I think, is a step above Liverpool's midfield at the moment. Vinicius had a breakthrough night, it felt, in the first leg. Karim Benzema is another player who is never, he's living in the shadow of Ronaldo, but consistently scores goals. And Asensio's had all sorts of injury problems. When you go back 2 or 3 years, he was, had a few of them, whether it was Isco, then Asensio, of bright young players who you felt were going to come and maybe dominate Spanish football. And for various reasons, it hasn't happened. So this is a Madrid team, when you see the way the draw is shaping up, I think we'll feel they have the inner knowledge of how to get it done.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, so it's Modric, Casemiro, Cruz, Vinicius, Benzema and Asensio, and then Liverpool. And no Keita this evening, you won't be shocked to hear. Wijnaldum, Fabinho and Milner. And then the front three, as Nathan said, is back to Salah, Firmino and Mane. It's Phillips and Kabak, and then Robertson and Alexander-Arnold. So that one feels on life support. Man City Dortmund very much alive, Anne-Marie.
Yeah, and Pep Guardiola has warned his players that their quarterfinal still hangs in the balance. They just take a 2-1 lead into that second leg. They're away to Borussia Dortmund. Kickoff there also at 8 o'clock. City have never reached the last four under Guardiola.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting. I mean, Dortmund are well capable of stealing a goal or two. The teams are in Zinchenko and Walker are the fullbacks. It's Diaz and Stones. He's gone for Gundogan, Rodri and De Bruyne, and then Mahrez, Bernardo Silva and Phil Foden, Raheem Sterling on the bench this evening. I mean, odds are they go through, Nathan, but then again, like we said, Haaland scores one and life gets a bit sticky, and all that weight that is on Man City in Europe so often comes to bear, I think.
Well, anything that can go wrong tends to go wrong for Manchester City. And if we're talking about Real Madrid having an inner belief, Manchester City, if it gets tight towards the end, you would worry that something horrible will go wrong for them. Borussia Dortmund aren't doing anything domestically at the moment, but they have the best young striker, well, if not the best, right up there in the top two in Erling Haaland, who just every time you want him to deliver, he does. And it wouldn't be at all surprised if he turned up tonight and nicked a couple of goals. And the conversation around Manchester City from where they lie in terms of greatness, I'm not convinced in any way that this City team is as great as the one of 2 years ago, 3 years ago. But if they win all four trophies, well, maybe that's a very different conversation. But if they were to lose tonight, suddenly the entire Pep project again comes under massive scrutiny, arguably unfair scrutiny. It's a cup competition. These things do happen. But he's made some big calls there. Again, Raheem Sterling has fallen out of favour. Not in the starting 11 for a match of this importance. João Cancelo is a bit of a surprise, considering how key he has been for Manchester City in so many big games, and so much analysis has been done of his positioning and how he frees up so many other players. But he does like Zinchenko and obviously feels that Walker provides a bit more of a straightforward wing-back threat than Cancelo. So, yeah, this one looks on paper to be far more interesting. But last night I thought there was going to be a lot of goals between Paris Saint-Germain and Bayern Munich. Didn't quite happen. It was still a brilliant game. It was still one of the best 1-0s you will ever watch in terms of the talent. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to tonight.
Yeah, no, it should be good. Your boy should wear the jersey. I mean, three guesses what the listeners want to talk about. I have a son who's a huge Harry Kane lover, and your boy is right to wear the jersey. Your boy. It must be 850 years now, Joe, is it not, says Donald. And then, of course, the other burning issue. Somebody simply says, I have Greggles, nipples, Greg, can you milk me? That's from Tom. Well played, Tom. I think the uselessness of the male nipple sums up that lad's attitude towards Henry McCain, who is, in fact, a legend, says Don. Henry McCain is one of the greats. I would say the best Vox Pop interviewer on Irish or English radio and probably beyond.
That is a tough gig, because Henry does this every day of the week. So to find people who will stop, to have that friendly face where they feel they can trust you and that you're not going to screw them over in the edit afterwards. And he's built that up over years. And every single day when you hear it, you go, there's a little bit of gold dust sprinkled in there. And that's Henry. Yeah. Henry is the gold dust.
He sure is. So that's Champions League. Anne-Marie, where are we going next?
Simon Zeebo, Joe, confirmed today that he has signed a one-year deal to return to play with Munster for next season. The province, along with the IRFU, said that Zeebo signed a co-funded contract and that will see him return to his home province after 3 years with Racing 92. He will now be eligible to play for Ireland again. That's ahead of the 2023 World Cup.
Yeah, huge boost. We got Andy Dunn and Keith Wood on the way after 8 o'clock, so we'll talk to them about that.
And then elsewhere, Leinster's Tadhg Furlong, Robbie Henshaw, Hugo Keenan and Josh van der Fleer all shortlisted today for the European Player of the Year award. Leo Cullen's side knocked out holders Exeter last weekend, and they'll play La Rochelle in the Heineken Champions Cup semi-finals in just over a fortnight. That's as they continue to go for an unprecedented fifth title. Elsewhere, Hugo Keenan, Scott Penny and Jack Conan all signed new contracts today, committing to the province for next season, while David Hawkshaw signed his first senior contract there, stepping up from the academy.
They seem to have a very efficient way of doing contracts, Leinster. Just always announced in batches. No protracted will he, won't he sign, Nathan.
No, their players don't have to go down that route. A lot of Irish players do, of leaking it into the papers that he could be going, he's on the verge of that big money move to France. And then the contract announcement comes about 1 o'clock that lunchtime. It's brilliant to see Zeebo back, isn't it? There's very few individuals in Irish sport that are so as universally just liked, that brings a smile to everybody's face, and particularly with the conversations that have gone on around Irish rugby, particularly the national side and the lack of spark and creativity. Such a shame what has happened over the last couple of years. It's, a lot of people feel it's a bit of a disgrace what has happened over the last couple of years, that he hasn't been allowed play for the national team. But I would imagine for Munster, even the players, they just cannot wait to have him back in the group.
Yeah. I was reading, so he's the record try scorer on 61 tries for Munster, and Keith Earls has moved to within one of that. So so watch those two not pass to each other all next season. To be fair, they have a brilliant relationship on the pitch and often track each other around there. So yeah, it's great for Munster for sure. The 1 year contract's kind of interesting. We'll ask the lads later on, is it almost a season, try and play yourself into a fully central contract, or will it always be co-funded, and in which case why is it 1 year? So I don't know, we'll see what the lads think after it.
Financial concerns, I'm sure, from the IRFU as well, because they pointed out that he has taken a substantial pay cut far below his own market value to come back to Munster. So I'm sure there are family reasons, and there's particularly maybe with COVID, life isn't as easy. You can't just fly back and forth to Paris whenever you want. He obviously wanted to make that return, and maybe wants to finish his jersey or finish his career in that Munster jersey. So it feels like a bit of a bonus for Munster that maybe they weren't expecting.
What else happening, Anne-Marie?
Manchester United boss Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, Joe, says that they've changed the colour of the seat coverings at Old Trafford to make it easier for players to see each other. The stands at Old Trafford obviously have been covered since football resumed. That's due to no fans being allowed in the stadium since last season. United have dropped 18 Premier League points at home this season. That's compared to just 12 on the road. And they're unbeaten in their last 23 away matches. So speaking ahead of their Europa League game tomorrow night, Solskjaer says that the colour of the banners has been changed from red to black, and here he explains why.
You'll see a change now, you know, we've changed. If you see the banners around the club, it's not red anymore. And we've looked into this, and there shouldn't be any reason, really. But some of the players have mentioned that, you know, that split-second decision that you have to make, look over your shoulder if your teammate's there or not, and the red shirt is on the red background, just with the red seats. And so we've, of course, tried to change that.
They play Granada, obviously, at Old Trafford tomorrow, and then Burnley at Old Trafford on Sunday. So these will have been changed.
Wow. So. It's 25 years yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the first thing I looked up as well, as to when the Southampton, and I was wondering, was there a connection to that? That's why he was asked the question. It does make some sense. You often see the issue where there's a ball boy or a substitute in the wrong colour, and the player sends that 40-yard crossfield ball, and then they shake their head and go, I thought you were on my team. But it seems like an incredible expense to go to as well.
Yeah.
But back in the day, wasn't it a vision specialist that Alex Ferguson employed around the club at times who pointed out this issue to him, that he was very keen on players who were out injured when they talk about match sharpness. I saw Gary Neville talking about this around the time and explaining the jersey change. When they talk about match sharpness, it wasn't just about fitness, that Ferguson spoke with a vision specialist who told him that actually you lose your tracking, that you're so used to playing matches that when you're not playing and you're away and doing physio, that goes. So they obviously had some vision training for the players, and that the vision specialist pointed this out, that actually for the players, when they turn quickly, that they can't see correctly. So Maybe that was what was brought for again.
I mean, it will be scoffed at and ridiculed by all, of course. But the red is, by definition, the exact same red as the jersey. So I can kind of imagine if you're down there and you suddenly turn and glance at first glance, maybe it doesn't stick out as much. All four of their Premier League defeats have come at home. Their defeat to PSG at home, their defeat to Man City in the Carabao Cup at home. Their away form is much better. I don't know. Nonsense, Anne-Marie, or are we saying fair enough?
Isn't it grey cars are involved in the most car crashes every year, year on year?
Oh, I don't know. Is it?
Yeah. No, it is. I've read that stat a few times. So it's to do with vision.
Mm.
So there is a theory there. Like,
This is maybe they've had players bringing it up time and time again and they have no choice and it's starting to frustrate them. Did they lose four matches this season at home because of it? Is there a way for them far better? Like, they have played at games where they have... Imagine they're going to have to play away matches, Joe, over the rest of the season, and they've no control over those banners inside the stadium.
Yeah, like, Leeds control them now and change all their banners to red in 2 weeks' time.
They'll bring their away jersey. I just feel sorry for the family who've just driven out of the car dealership in their new grey car and so excited and turned on the radio and said, let's... Anne-Marie's just crushed them. You can tell Nathan. By the way, Nathan, this is from Evan.
People are telling me things for the last 24 hours, Joe.
This is from Emmett Keane. He likes to think his name is pronounced Kane.
My old neighbour.
I know, yeah. He likes to think his name is pronounced Kane. But if you know Emmett Keane...
Well, in Mayo, we pronounce it Kane.
In Ballyhonus, it's Emmett Keane. You can tell Nathan that crack might wash in Dublin. It won't do in Ballyhonus. So, Nathan, if your son thinks about bringing that English jersey down to Ballyhonus...
Yeah, bring the son down to his grandparents in rural Mayo.
They're not animals down there.
So we're not allowed to leave our own county at the moment, so unfortunately. My parents are bigger traders. They left Mayo and jumped ship and moved to Galway a couple of years ago. So listen, there's a pattern emerging there, isn't there?
Treachery.
He'll have an England jersey and a Dublin jersey. Like, the battle is lost with this child.
Yeah. So final couple of minutes here. Serious story. The Slavia Prague defender has been given. Is it a 10-match ban, Anne-Marie?
Yeah, Andre Cadella announced today by UEFA that he has received a 10-match ban. This is after Rangers midfielder Glenn Kamara claimed he had been racially abused by him during their Europa League match at Ibrox last month. We all saw the footage, obviously, and this rules him out for representative team competition matches as well. So that basically means that he'll miss the Euros for the Czech Republic. Slavia Prague host Arsenal in the second leg of their Europa League quarter-final tomorrow night. That leg is poised at 1-1 after the first tie. Kamara also given a 3-game European suspension for assaulting him in the tunnel after the game. So this received a lot of attention on social media, and Rangers have said that they welcome the suspension imposed and that they will be appealing the suspension that has been given to two of those players, Glenn Kamara and Kamara Roof, for their participation in the incident. And they've said that they'll make no more further comment on the matter at this stage. So a lot of people confused as to why he received a 3-game ban after he was racially abused.
Am I right in saying, so Rangers say that they're pleased because the 10 games is the maximum number you can be banned for by UEFA for this offence?
Yeah, so they said they were pleased to see UEFA come down hard on it with the maximum suspension, but they're disappointed as to why two of their players have
been suspended. Okay, so the UEFA have given the maximum ban, which is 10 games, and the guy's missing the Euros, so he'll feel that for sure. But I saw Ian Wright, Nathan, about 4 or 5 hours ago. He was retweeting a tweet from Colin Miller out there who said 10 games for racist behaviour, whereas Kieran Trippier gets 12 games for telling a few friends he was moving to Spain, and they went off and put bets on it. And Ian Wright tweeted afterwards, "I'm guilty of this kind of thinking as well. So many times you think to yourself, this is a chance for them to send a message, or this is a chance for them to show how seriously they take it, only to be disappointed time and time again." They may need to look at changing the maximum sentence, I would think. 10 games, if it's something as blatant as this, as described and as alleged, then 10 games is not going to sit well next to 12 games for Kieran Trippier for literally WhatsApping his mates to say, by the way, lads, word is I'm off to Spain.
No, and listen, justice is served in different ways for different cases. But you're right, 10 games cannot be the maximum. And Slavia Prague, if they as a club had come out and condemned their player, maybe it's very harsh to throw Slavia Prague out of the competition on what one player has done, but their attitude has been to defend them. So I think if they had thrown Slavia Prague out of the competition, nobody would have had any issues with that at all. And maybe it would have sent out a marker. And maybe you're taking away their prize money as well. And maybe then the clubs will realize they have to take a harder line. But at the moment, what happens is there's a racist incident. Their club defends them straight away. They get the club will get a 50 grand fine. This is probably even seen as a severe suspension, or is a severe suspension from a UEFA point of view for a player, in that he's going to miss the Euros as well. But as Ian Wright said, like at some stage, they're going to have to start throwing teams out of the competition for this.
Mm. Yeah, I would think so. Anne-Marie?
Just a couple of last stories, Joe. Rome today confirmed as the ninth Euro 2020 host city. UEFA, obviously, as we know, still seeking additional information on the number of supporters that would be allowed to attend matches in Dublin, Bilbao and Munich before giving them the green light to host fixtures. So we still don't know what's happening with that. And with 100 days to go until the Olympics in Tokyo, New Zealand today has started vaccinating their athletes. International Olympic Committee President Thomas Bach said in March that vaccinations for COVID-19 are not a requirement for athletes, but New Zealand's Olympic Committee today said that their first athletes have started receiving vaccines, saying they're satisfied the government was able to put them in a category of national significance. Meanwhile, Australia is also confident that their 500 athletes that they sent to Tokyo, as well as staff and officials, will all be vaccinated.
All right, New Zealand, we get it. You've won COVID. You win COVID by miles. Yeah, the game's over. I was about to suggest that Zidane is the most underrated manager in history, although I see Gavin Cooney just tweeted, Nathan, Zidane becoming a kind of managerial Steve Finnan. So many people are saying he's underrated to the point he is now definitely rated. I still think he is underrated. He would never, nobody ever, when they're listing off, like say if we're talking about Mourinho, as we were the other evening with Pat Nevin, and I would say, oh, Mourinho, you know, he's just not in that class with Pep and with Klopp and the up-and-comers like Nagelsmann. For some reason, it wouldn't even occur to me to mention Zidane. That is underrated.
No, but has any Barcelona manager ever got any credit for anything that happened there, with the exception of Pep, because it's all put at the feet of Messi?
Who's their most successful with post-Pep? Did they win a Champions League?
They fairly tear through them. Yeah, they won the Champions League, last Champions League.
Under
2014?
I'll Wikipedia.
Dude, this is top quality radio. But
Zidane.
Yeah, he's had a very good week. If they were to lose tonight, it'll be because of Zidane. That tactically, he wasn't quite up to it.
Mm.
Graham Hunter was good on OTBAM yesterday. There's been a lot of... what he is very clearly good at is creating an environment where elite players can perform, which is one of the key things for any manager who is at that level. So he has an understanding. How could he not... of what the very best need to produce their goods on the day. So that is, and the fact he doesn't maybe have the personality of a Mourinho or a Klopp arguably goes against them as well.
Yeah. They did win it in 15, you're right. So that was against Juventus. That was a really good final. They won it in 11 and they won it in 15. Who was there in 15? I don't know. I'll check it.
You're just not very good at Googling, are you?
No, sometimes I do think I am terrible at Googling, actually.
You're terrible at Googling?
Yeah.
That's
I'll explain to you another time.
What is the issue? Luis Enrique was the manager.
Was it Enrique? Yeah, but Enrique wouldn't be rated in that sphere as well.
He just took over. Yeah, I'm very good at Googling.
Oh, you're better at Googling than Joe.
That's a major fault job for you, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a real...
What is the issue? Like, all you do is type in 2015...
Yeah, are you still Googling? Barcelona, like, what are you typing?
I write words like the and... No, I don't know. Listen, it's a low point to end the news round. I apologise. I took us down that route.
Anne-Marie, I'm here for one day, Joe.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks.
Nathan Murphy, get out there. Buy that jersey.
I will see. There'll be no pictures of it either way.
Okay. Every day this week, we're giving away 4 tickets to the upcoming Leaders Lounge event. There's a ticket for you and 3 friends, along with a hamper of goodies to enjoy during the event. All happening April 22nd, a world-class panel of leaders, Razzie Erasmus, Brian O'Driscoll, Chanel McCoy, Joanna Reardon and Paul McGinley. To be in with the chance of winning, just tell us how many senior international caps did Brian O'Driscoll get for Ireland? So how many test caps does Brian O'Driscoll have for Ireland? Text your name and answer to 53106 for 30 cents. We'll contact you after the show. All with thanks to Leaders Lounge. Check out leaderslounge.live.com. We are talking Champions League next.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.